Welcome to another edition of the Odyssey Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Schultz, and we talk about ancient mysteries and modern mysteries and all types of metaphysical topics. And today we're going to be talking about how to find your soulmate, and I've invited a certified hypnotherapist on the show to talk about this subject. His name is Ryaka, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us. You know, I have a few friends who are hypnotherapists, and you can go in many directions with hypnotherapy, like specializing in weight loss or stopping smoking or drug addiction, but you've chosen how to find a soulmate as your path. Can you tell me how that came about?
Yeah. A part of it is when I was in, just turned almost 40, I realized in my own life that something was missing. I had a lot of relationships, or I'd had relationships, and then I had girlfriends that would come over and we would have a nice time, have relationships and stuff like that. But I felt very empty inside and lonely, and I didn't know why. So I started doing some self-examination and found that I had parts of myself that were really resisting being open, being vulnerable. And when I tracked it back, it just it went back to when my mom had died, so when I was younger. So I did some shifts with that and decided I wasn't going to have any kind of romantic connection until I was really with the one that I could go all the way with. Mm-hmm. And it took a year when I was celibate, and I did a number of things to help attract the mate, and then she showed up. And so that's how I got started.
I see. So when, you know, you talk about hypnotherapy, you're accessing the subconscious mind, and, you know, a lot of us have this little voice in our head that says, well, you're always going to be single, you're never going to find the right one. It's kind of this negative voice that drones on and on. So how does hypnotherapy get around that?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a real important one, too. And the first thing to do is to listen to that voice and hone in on it, and what is it particularly that it's saying? Because some of them will be, you know, it doesn't exist, you know, the person, I'm flying alone, it's too much trouble, the good ones are gay, they'll be controlled,
yeah.
You know, or in my case, it's like they will leave or die. So the first thing is let that part come out, become more aware of it. And then you want to, hypnosis helps by going to the part within that is throwing up these doubts. And that's the resistor. You know, there's a lot of talk these days about a video out called The Secret. And The Secret is great with showing how to affirm things, how to draw things to you, how to manifest and co-create your life. But what it doesn't deal with is the question you asked. It's like, what about the voice of doubt? What about that part that resists? So that's where hypnosis comes in. You can do a hypnosis session, and you can talk to that part of yourself, which we call the guardian, that is the resistor, the protector.
Mm-hmm.
Interview that part and find out, why are you having a tough time? Why are you resisting having a mate? And that part will tell you, and it will have a strategy of how it's sabotaging you having the mate come closer, and you can find out why, and then you can start the great debate, and that is trying to alter that part of your perception and taking it to a greater view.
I see. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So why don't you kind of walk us through it when a client comes to you? What's kind of the first aspect of wanting to find a soulmate, or maybe someone's been single a long time? What do you work with first with a person?
Okay. We have, if they call ahead of time, I refer them to the website, and I say there's a soulmate questionnaire. And if you fill that out, it's just 2 pages front and back, you know, one front and back. Mm-hmm. And there's only about 12 questions on it. And if someone fills that out and then they come into the office, I can look that over and within 5 minutes have a real good bead on what's going on with that person. Certain things I would check on is how long has it been since they were in their last relationship, and or have they really, really let go of that relationship, or are they kidding themselves? And that's how available they are. If they're holding on even subconsciously, mm-hmm. which is oftentimes the case, with something that they think intellectually is over, that's going to put a real damper on their ability to be available,
sure.
to be present. Yeah. And then another area that's really important is, what happened in childhood? You know, what was going on there when you look over things like, were you adopted? Did you have childhood illness? Were your parents divorced or separated? Was there abuse? Was there a drug problem with one of your parents or something like that? All these things will be indications of challenges they are working through. And this resistive part that we talked about, this guardian, will be protecting them from having a do-over of that kind of experience in life. Does that make sense?
Sure. So, in other words, some people may just be replaying old dramas.
Right, right.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. What do you say to somebody who, they really like one person in particular? Should they be trying to manifest this specific person, or is that unethical to maybe go against another person's will?
Okay. Well, I think it gets back to going within, checking with your own inner guidance, and saying something like, I really would like to be with so-and-so, but I'm going to put it out that if for some reason that isn't for my highest good and this person's highest good, then bring me the partner, the person that is.
Yes, that sounds very good. But when you're visualizing, should you visualize that particular person, or?
I think it's better, Mike, if it's more open-ended. If you put a face on it, it sort of limits the ability of your own magnetism to draw to you something that maybe consciously you're thinking that this person would just be ideal, and maybe they would. And if that's the case, that will be the person you draw. But if you leave it open, in and enough, by not having a particular face on it, then you allow some room for something even better to come.
That makes a lot of sense. I want to remind our listeners that you're located in Portland, Oregon, and we have a nationwide audience. We're actually on in several other countries around the world. So are you available for phone consultations for people trying to find a soulmate?
Yes, I am. And can I give the number?
Absolutely.
503-257-1311. And if they went to the website at sacredunions.net, they would be able to find the questionnaire there, and that would help to get things stimulated and help them be more prepared for the session.
Okay, let's get back to that questionnaire. Tell me about some of the other questions and how that helps you key in on where a person is at.
Okay, the first question is, what are the qualities that you want in a soulmate? And we list a whole bunch of them, and then we say, pick out the three most important ones. And that helps a person to start focusing on what they want in a mate, which is good for drawing the mate to them. But what I'm looking for beyond that is, if someone's looking for someone that's it's really on the top of their game, that they're faithful, well, that's sort of an indication to me that they've been in a relationship where the person wasn't faithful. If integrity is really important, perhaps they've been with a person that wasn't too integrous. Mm-hmm. And that sort of helps me to get a little window into that. The other few questions that are really good is, what does your voice of doubt have to say? Some of those things we talked about a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What's going on there? And the one that's interesting is, are you better at giving or receiving love? And most of us with that questionnaire say 99%, we're all better at giving. But that's pretty interesting, and it brings it around to, you know, we're out, we're looking, we're doing everything we can to draw that soulmate, but a lot of times there is a part of us there that isn't open up. It's hard for us to, we can give, but we don't open up our hearts and let the love come in.
I see. We have to be receptive.
Yes.
How can we do that?
Well, we have a CD called Accepting Love, and we do this session in our groups. And it's actually the thing that I was talking about to someone at the fair where we met, the psychic fair, where you were hearing part of that conversation. It's we started out with a hypnosis, and then we have a person look within or feel within or imagine their heart center. And then at the count of three, they're going to see whatever is covering over their heart that would be impeding them having their heart open and being able to bring in love. So sometimes things like that will show up on something like that. Someone will see, say, a cheesecloth that's layered over. That's someone that's not in having too much trouble there. It's enough air to let some feelings in, but there's still that little bit of covering. Some people have something as strong as a brick wall that's built up there. Some people have a bolted hatch cover. There can be tin foil. There was one person that had their heart wrapped in tin foil, and then underneath that, you know, we always say take off as much as you feel is comfortable of this protection so you can open up and receive more love. And this person could remove the tin foil, but under that was saran wrap wrapped around the heart. So it's things like that.
I see. So I know one of the questions you ask a client is, how available are you? And so what types of answers are you looking for with that question?
Well, that's really important, and it deals with how long have they been single? Now, and we can go two ways with this. There's people that have been single a whole long time. Maybe they've been 8 years out of a relationship, and they're really clear. Their issue is going to be one that's different than someone that can't be by themselves. In other words, you know, I just finished my relationship 2 weeks ago, kind of, but I'm talking to him all the time or talking to her all the time, and we see each other still. And that gets back to wanting to be clear the space, bring all the energy into the present. We call someone that's hanging out in the in-between as being in the gray zone, where they're still hanging on to someone. And I'll give you an example.
Okay.
There was a, in our group, there was a woman in her mid-40s, and she had been divorced for 12 years. And she wanted her soulmate. So we did this letting go hypnosis, and she found out that one of the reasons that she wasn't drawing her soulmate was she was not ready to be available sexually, because she found out that her husband was still had her sexuality. And this was because at the later years of their relationship, there wasn't much juice flowing. Mm-hmm. So she felt kind of ashamed that he didn't want her. So it was important for her in this session to take back her sexuality and come into the present with what it is she wanted so that she could have that. He also had her dignity, because there wasn't a lot of mutual respect towards the end of that. So she took that back. This is taking back things that someone else has and bringing all your energy into the present. And if you do that, you're much more available and much more apt to draw a mate to you.
I see. I can kind of confirm that, because as a tarot card reader, I find things coming up from 12, 15 years ago from old marriages. It's amazing to me.
Right.
That, yeah. But it's, if it's not dealt with, then it's still there, repelling you from finding the new person.
Yes, yes. And I wanted to say that when we met, we traded, and you gave me a reading, and I was mentioning to you earlier, it was very accurate. Things you told me have already happened, and that was, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, thank you. Well, I find that, you know, the tarot cards really access your spirit guides, and they really want to help you with information. So that's why it works so well. I want to ask you about your, I know you have a line of CDs, and explain how that works. Does it take the person into hypnosis, or are they conscious? And explain how these work out.
Okay, yes. Our hypnosis is a little different than most. The first thing that we always do is to access the superconscious mind, which is Some people refer to that as the higher self. We happen to call it the enlightened self. So we're drawing upon one's own inner wisdom, their own inner strength. So we help put them more in touch with that. Because a lot of people are familiar with the principle of higher self, but they don't actually use it and bring it into their life in every day. Things move fast and it doesn't always happen. So this is the first thing that we do. And then the second is, it depends on which program one's listening to. One of them is called Enlightened Self-Love. And we find that it's very important to love yourself, because if you're out there looking for a mate and you don't love yourself, but you're saying, hey, come over here, love me, because I can't get there, you're not going to attract what you really want. So if you start with yourself, and in this program, you go into hypnosis, you relax, you breathe deep, and some people will fall asleep very soon into the CD. It's okay. Those suggestions are going in. In this one, you have your enlightened self, your higher self, bringing in all these wonderful colors of love and filling up your whole being with love. And then there's powerful suggestions about how lovable the person is and how much they deserve love and they deserve their mate, things of that nature.
So even if you fall asleep during the playing of the CD, it still processes in the subconscious.
Yes, that's true. Mm. And matter of fact, we do two sides. One is an awake program and the other is sleep. And I guess that's one of the most common questions I get from clients is, hey, I don't think I'm doing the work. And I says, well, relax, just enjoy it. While you're sleeping, it's going in very deep.
Right. Well, I believe it's your wife who speaks on the tape, and her voice is very soothing. So I found myself drifting off to sleep, and I just wanted to make sure it's still working.
Oh, right. Well, thank you. Yeah, I like her voice, too. It's mm-hmm. It's very sweet and easy.
Absolutely.
Flow.
Now I have a great metaphysical question I want to pose on the table here. Do you believe a person has one soulmate in their life they're destined to be with, or are there many possible candidates that a person could be with throughout their life?
Our belief is that there are many.
Mm-hmm. I do believe that, too.
Yeah, and you draw to you the one that is right for your next phase of growth and what is happening to you at this time.
Right. So how would this work on a metaphysical level? Let's say you're working with the tape, you're drawing your soulmate toward you, but you're in Portland, Oregon, and they're in New York. I mean, and you're never going to go there. You're 3,000 miles away. How would it happen?
Well, it's just knowing that when you have cleared out the resistance, you know, we talked about that voice of doubt and that part, which we call a guardian, that is putting up barricades, putting up blockades, wanting to keep you, quote, safe. Once you've got that cleared out, there's just that inner knowing that the everyday things, that the logistics, they just melt away.
Uh-huh.
When you are ready, it will happen. It will happen magically. And it's just the way it's supposed to. And the fact that that person happens to be there or not, something will happen to draw the two of you together.
Well, now I need an anecdote. Why don't you tell me, like, someone you know in real life where maybe they've lived in two completely different cities and somehow someone kind of magically, you know, they found each other. Have you a story like that or anything of that nature?
Nothing comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
Well, with the exception of this, I talked about this woman earlier who had was in the group, and her husband had her sexuality and her dignity. Well, she took those back. There's a second part to that story that can fit in here. It's somebody else in the group was saying, hey, I'd like you to, telling another woman, I'd like you to meet so-and-so. He's a really great guy. And she took offense. She says, well, why didn't you tell me about it? This was happening at her work. That's what she was telling to her coworker. Why didn't you tell me? It actually was her secretary. Secretary had been with her for over 8 years. And her secretary said, well, I thought you were married. The point here is that, well, she'd been divorced for 12 years, but her energy signature was such that she was still taken. She was off the market. She was married. My point being is, once she cleared that up, she got very angry when she figured that out. She figured out her guardian was using that to cloak her, so she was not available. She took the steps to change that, which one of the things was she got on a bag, put a bat in the hands, in your hands, and beat on a punching bag, and just took her power back and said that was not going to stand. She was saying no to that kind of behavior. This we call energetic expression. And after she said no to that kind of behavior, she started pounding on that bag with all her energy, all her might, and saying yes to what she wanted. I want my soulmate. I want my soulmate. When do you want that soulmate? Now. And as soon as she did that, things shifted. We got an email from her because we had moved in the interim, and she said she had found her soulmate, and it was everything that she was looking for.
Fantastic.
Now, and that would be my point. Although I don't have any story of what you were saying, it's like it all gets back to the same thing. Once you clear your energy field of the resistance and you open up your heart and you're ready to be vulnerable, ready to be open, things shift. They just do.
Wow. So tell us about maybe some of your other clients, of course, without mentioning names, who have, you know, really been confirmed bachelors or just people who really were having a hard time in the singles market and how they were able to find somebody.
Okay. Well, there was, let's call the person Glenn. I will never, I don't use, you know, the real names as you said. he came and he was saying how frustrated he was because he had been with somebody that he liked quite well. She had a couple of children, and they were playing on a holiday in the backyard. And for some reason, it triggered something in him, and he got very upset. And they had a fight and broke up. So he was doing some soul searching, and he came, and he says, I'd really like to have someone in my life. I want my mate. But he says, this sort of thing isn't the first time it happened, and I don't know what's going on here. So we did a regression where I took him back to what's happening earlier in life, and he finds himself, he's about 5 years old, and mom and dad are fighting, and he ends up going into the closet to hide. Well, as this session unfolded, he realized his words that I'm still hiding in the closet. I can't tell the woman I love that I really care about or that I really have feelings. Okay, that was his first realization. I worked with him for a little while. I saw him about 3 weeks later. His second realization was this. He was seeing different women and had been doing this even prior to this time. Yet all the time, no matter who he was with, he would always have a connection and contact with his ex-girlfriend, who he was engaged with at one time, but he'd gotten so close, part of him reared up and pushed that person away. But they were still friends. And so when I inquired about that, I found out that, and he wasn't even sure of this until we started talking about it, but as long as he could have her to talk with and be safe, he could go out and have sex with someone else. However, he would not allow himself to let go enough to be fully present in these new relationships, because if that was to happen, then he would be available and he could actually have the whole package. And on some level, that was too scary for him.
Mm-hmm.
When he realized this, and when he said goodbye, and he did alone time to his ex-girlfriend, things opened up for him, and he attracted to him the kind of mate that he really wanted. And it was scary, and he had to take a little bit at a time, but he did work with that inner child that was so scared and kept running into the closet. He started loving and taking that part and reparenting it, and that helped him to move forward.
That's a great story. So what about somebody who's maybe married and comes to you and their marriage isn't going so well? They're not sure if it's their soulmate or not. What, how could you find out?
Oh, if the one that they're with is... well, the first thing I say is, you know, it's kind of indicative that something isn't right because you're here asking the question.
You're asking, yeah.
Right. And the second thing that we tell the people or whoever comes in that situation is, before you say goodbye to something, you need to take a look inside and check and find out, is what part of you is resisting? You could have a whole lot more with the person you're with. Are you sure that it's not some part of you sabotaging having more? So our advice is to look within and make the determination that I'm going to give this relationship every chance. I'm going to go the extra mile. I'm going to risk. And I'm going to find out for sure what's there. And if you do that, you're either going to find out that, hey, you were holding back and you can have some more and that partner's going to be on the other end reciprocating, or you're going to find out that, you know what, no matter what I do and how hard I try, it's just not happening. In which case, you have the peace of mind and you've been integrous, and then it's time to say goodbye.
Right, so maybe go into counseling intensely or just do something to actually find out if it can work.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
kind of either push it one way or the other off the fence, but don't just sit there on the fence then.
Well said.
Okay, yeah, because once again, that comes up in my readings a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you're working on a new book. The title is How Soulmates Meet, Creating Sacred Union. Why don't you talk about what a sacred union is?
Okay. Sacred union is the ability to bring all of our parts together. We talked a little bit about some different parts, and we talked about the resistor, which is the part of us that sabotages things and orchestrates our defenses. That's the guardian. And we also talked about inner children. Those would be our young parts, and we each have them, and things have happened to those young parts growing up. Some of them, if something traumatic happened, have been sort of frozen back in time. And when we go back through regression and find them, we get a chance to free them from isolation. And then we bring them back to this union, and we start putting them together with the other parts so that no part is left behind, no part is isolated, and no part has the small view, because we're also bringing them into the love and support of the enlightened self, which has the larger view, which has the love. And, of course, you've got the adult, who is the one that's strong enough now to go back and help rescue those young parts. And then there's one other part that we haven't talked about, and that's the inner mate. And that's a part that each of us has. If I'm male, then my inner mate would be female, and, you know, vice versa for females.
Mm-hmm.
So these are very wonderful parts of ourselves that are have a very high consciousness, and they have the ability to be very helpful and strong allies. They're the parts that still trust. They bring balance. So if someone, say, had been abused when they were young, say they were 5 years old when they were sexually abused, if this happened to a young girl, she's not going to trust men. So we bring in the inner mate, her little matching five-year-old. In a session, I'll say, now look around behind you and look for a little boy your age. He's very benign. He's very gentle. You can count on him. Always the person turns around and they find that little inner mate. Well, then they start to get comfortable with that part. So again, we're ending the isolation and we're starting to build trust. Then maybe in the next session we'll work with an older part. Maybe it'll be 8 or 10 or 15. We'll match up an inner mate again. So we're growing up trust as we mature these parts. So in our sacred union, we've got all these young parts that are matched up, if need be, with their inner mate. They are healed. And you've got the enlightened self and the guardian. And all parts are coming together. And instead of this discordant thing of everyone going in their own directions, drawing a mate. You know, you can have a young part that wants basically a parental figure to take care of them. Well, if we heal our inner children, we're not going to be drawing the same kind of mates that we did before. We're going to be drawing a more mature version someone that we can share things with. And this is what we're trying to bring together in the Sacred Union, all parts coming together. And once you have them all together, you can just imagine the kind of power you bring to magnetizing and drawing a mate, all parts of you going together, wanting the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And they can do this work on these CDs as well?
Right, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, some of it, I would say, a regression, no. That would be something to do with a hypnotherapist. But many of the steps, yes. The letting go is such an important one, as we talked about being available. That's a great CD where we do a whole session on finding out where are we holding on to. Does the person that we used to be with, are they holding our power? Are they holding our self-esteem? Where are the discordant ties? What are the cords that are still unhealthy that are connected? We cut all those cords, bring every part of them into the present.
Mm-hmm. So give out that website again so people can read descriptions of the CDs.
Yeah, Sacred Unions, UNIONS, at sacredunions.net.
Okay, well, that's real easy. Now let me ask you this question. Are there certain people who are destined to be single their whole lives? Maybe that's their path, or do you think every person has a soulmate?
I think that everyone has a soulmate. I think, and there are some people destined to be, I don't know if the word's destined, I think it's guardian choice.
Uh-huh.
And then again, you know, I'm not accounting for people in monasteries and things like that. So I guess my own gut feeling on that is...
Maybe 95%?
I think that, you know, it's like we talk to people and they'll say, sometimes we get like, well, what do you do? And we say, well, we work with soulmates. And they will say, oh, gosh, you know, I've done everything I can and I don't care anymore. I'm just going to leave it up to God or the universe or whatever. And when we start asking a few more questions, we find that underneath that, there's a person that really wants love and has tried things but is very frustrated because they haven't worked. And what we've developed is techniques that will help to move past that frustration and shift things enough so that they can. And I do think that most of us, almost all of us, want that. I mean, that's the fuel. That's the juice. That's the good stuff.
Right. You know, my tarot teacher a long time ago, she talked to me about people who are constantly on the dating scene, going to bars, joining internets. They're going on all these dates, and they're pushing, and they're coming up empty because they're pushing energy out.
Yes.
They're not receiving. They're just trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like working with your tapes is kind of like the opposite of that. Instead of like running around frantically in the bar scene or whatever, internet dating, it's kind of like working with yourself, and then maybe through the course of your daily life, the person kind of just appears.
That's it. That's it. You know, I've had people that come up and say, you know what, I'd really like to have my mate, but I can't do the scene anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't do the internet dating. I'm burned out. I can't do this. And I said, look, as long as you make the internal shifts and then go through life with an open heart, you will have that mate. You don't have to jump through hoops. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go through speed dating. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's your path and that's the way that you're going to, you know, you want to be out there and do it. But as you say, the key is to first do the work on the inside and then it's like you just draw it to you rather than chasing it.
So then you just go out and do things you like to do, like maybe, you know, just go to sports games or join a tennis group or go on hikes and just go out with people. And then, you know, maybe someone who likes your same interest will manifest in those groups and things.
That's right. If you're okay with you, that's a big thing. If you're happy with yourself, if you like yourself, if you love yourself, and you're enjoying life, you're a magnet. You're out there. You're doing life, mm-hmm. and you're sending out great energy, and you're sending out a wonderful magnet.
You're a magnet. I like that. And then it takes away all the kind of artificialness of the dating scene.
Right, right.
It's
yeah.
more natural.
Yeah. You don't have to jump through hoops or go to places that turn you off, because if you're in places that turn you off, you think you're going to find your mate there? I don't think so. And she wouldn't show up there, or he wouldn't show up there. They're going to be someplace else where you'd be.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So what are some of the other effective techniques you can use when people come to you to kind of make this shift?
Okay. We mentioned a little bit about energetic expression, and we're very excited about that. It started with helping people move through frustration and anger and just getting that out. A lot of times people are just so frustrated because they've tried things and they feel angry that no matter what they try or what they do, they're still alone. So what we do is find out, okay, what is the block? And then what's the resistance? And then we put them in front of a bag, put the bat in their hands, and they say, look, you have to be stronger than the resistance. You've got to amp up your energy. When we do our groups, it's like a 8-week group, How to Meet Your Soulmate, and we do a specific hypnosis session at each one of those. And the first night, we go to the bag, and we put the bat in each person's hand, and we say, you want your soulmate? Come forward with all your energy and show us, show your mate how much you want your mate. Well, I can tell really quickly where someone's at on their path of you know, how quickly they're going to get their mate by the amount of energy or resistance they've got to stepping up and doing that. People that come up and really wail on that and say, I want my mate, and I want my mate now, those people are much closer to having their mate. If they have a tough time doing that, that indicates the amount of resistance. So that technique is very powerful. One, saying no to the old ways of resistance, of no to what didn't work, and then you start saying yes to what you want in your mate, the qualities you want, and the fact that you want your mate now. We mentioned hypnosis already, so one of the other ones is the work that Betsy, my partner and co-writer of the book, does. She's a registered nurse, and she does energy balancing. This is work helping to move through the chakra system and clear out any of the encumbrances in the energy fields that is impeding a natural flow. She also helps to bring in more of the soul energy to help energize and draw the mate as well.
And so the bottom line is just to work with some metaphysical tools before you can really go out there. If you're unbalanced, it's not going to work.
Right, right. And this is another thing I wanted to mention is we have been in spiritual circles where people are top-heavy spiritually, meaning that they're very advanced spiritually. They've done initiations or they have done work on one level or another where they're extremely spiritual, but they have not balanced it out by doing emotional work to grow the emotional body, in which case things get sort of anchored behind because you can't get to the other end of things if you don't have a clear emotional body.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you found that people who are into advanced metaphysics can go out and date the general population, or is it just too hard? Is there just too much of a difference spiritually?
Well, I think that it's a matter of vibration. I don't think that someone that is riding that kind of vibration, emitting that kind of energy, is going to be attracting. They're not going to be drawn to,
okay,
and they're not going to attract to them someone that isn't going to be at that same vibrational frequency. So they would, if they were out in the dating scene, let's say they just happened to go into a bar, they're not going to be fulfilled. It goes back to what we were talking about before, Mike, where you know, you're not going to be happy if you're hanging out in a place that doesn't, you didn't want to be in the first place.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel soulmates are generally opposites who complement each other, or are they generally two people who are very much alike?
Oh, that's a great question, and my wife is really good at this, and it's one of the things we address in one of the first chapters. There is what's known as balancing mates, which is someone that is opposite. For example, in my last my first marriage. I've only been married twice, but my wife was a very grounded person, and I'm not too grounded. I'm kind of expansive, and so when we would do life, she would balance me out by those areas that I would have trouble. Now, Betsy, my wife, my soulmate, now is very much like me. We call that a resonative mate. We're both very expansive. Well, it's a very sweet ride because you just melt together, and it's wonderful. But it also has this thing where she's not good at the things I'm not good at, you know. So we go through life, and it's like finding, you know, directions are hard for me. Well, she doesn't like that computer stuff. Neither one of us is very good with that. So you've either got your balancing mates that complement each other, or you've got your resonative. And sometimes there's shades of in-between, and you draw to you whichever is the optimum for your soul growth at the time.
Right, but I guess the key thing is you wouldn't want someone to rescue you, maybe financially or whatever, from your problems, correct? I mean, that's...
Right, that's, you know, not, a little breathing room is
stable.
Okay, but... Pardon?
You want to be somewhat stable when you go out in the dating scene and not look for, like, a rescuer.
Oh, right, right. Emotional rescuer,
financial rescuer. Yeah.
Right. It's a recipe for...
Disaster.
Yeah, another, you know, the thing is, some people that come out of a relationship and bounce right back into another one, taking no time to make shifts or changes, oftentimes just go back into the same cycle of repeating it. And the things that they found unfulfilling before get even perhaps more intensified because they're doing it again and again.
Right, absolutely. Well, this has been a fascinating session. Do you have any kind of last or final thoughts and before we give out your phone number and website one final time?
I guess that my final thought would be that I'm a very much an optimist. Like I said, I was close to 40 before I really opened up and found love, and I was very sad and I was very alone. Even though I had lots of companionship, I did not find someone that I could really open up my heart and share. And more correctly, they could have been standing right in front of me and it wouldn't have mattered because I wasn't open.
Uh-huh.
So I believe in love. I believe that your mate is out there for you, and I believe you can have it. And don't give up, because your mate is out there looking for you.
Yeah, and I sense that, you know, you really have a great phone presence and that people all over the country can, you know, call you for a session and unblock some things over the phone.
Well, what a great thing to say. And, yes, I've worked with people, and it can be very effective.
So why don't you give out that contact info one more time? The website and phone number?
Okay, the website is sacredunions.net, and then the phone number is 503-257-1311.
And how many CDs do you have in the series now?
We have 8. I think 6 of them are on the website, and then the last 2 that we made, one is called Soul Esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's energizing, much more positive self-image. And that one was pretty recent, and I was very inspired by the work of Nathaniel Brandon and Carolyn Meese on self-esteem. And then the other one is called Soul Empowered Ideal Weight, drawing upon your own enlightened self, your own internal power. Once you begin healthy habits, this part of you is just going to help to make them part of your life forever.
Ah, that's fantastic. So it's a really exciting session we've had, and I want to remind everybody this is going to be in the permanent archives. Just click on Odyssey on the main website and the archives, and this will be up so you can reference this interview again. So thank you, Ryaka, for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Mike. I really enjoyed our time together.
All right, I'll see you out there in the metaphysical circuit in Portland, Seattle.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Ryaka with Sacred Unions, and please check out his information. He's a great guy that I did meet at a psychic fair recently, and you know, I just always sense when someone needs to come on and be a guest. I mean, you know, at a typical psychic fair, I'll meet like, you know, 30 or 40 workers, but certain ones, it's, they just stand out, and I can just tell by their presence, you know, I really need to have them on the radio and to a nationwide audience and share their information. So anyway, we have 10 minutes left or so. So my name is Mike Schultz. Once again, I'm the host of Odyssey each week. And I try to bring you a very exciting and fascinating guest each week. Next week, I have a really a big star, David Childress, the author of many, many books on ancient monuments around the world. So please join us next week for David Childress. And I'll tell you a bit more about myself. I am a tarot reader, as I mentioned in the interview, and I do readings by phone as well. And sometimes people just sense that they really need to talk with me for half an hour or an hour session. And it's usually a person who's at a crossroads, and they kind of have some decisions they need to make, and they don't want to make the wrong decision and waste their time. Like, you know, should I go to medical school and, you know, waste 4 years of your life if it's the wrong thing? And it's good to have a session with, you know, some sensitive people who are outsiders, who are third parties, who are very neutral, and can just, I can just read the cards like I'm reading a newspaper. And I always caution people, don't make a huge decision based on just a tarot reading. But I am, you know, a sensitive, helpful person, so let my voice be one of the choir to help you make your decisions. And then consult with many other people in your life who you respect and trust, and also go into meditation. And if it's hard for you to meditate, just walk out into nature. That's what I tell people. Just go for a walk in the woods, go to the beach, the river by yourself, and just walk. Just walk for an hour. And, you know, pose that question to the universe, to your spirit guides, and you will get some insights and some answers. So that's one of the best ways to go about it. So I am available as well, and I'd like you to go to my website and find out a bit more about tarot and the kind of readings I do. And you can see my photo, and you can click on the button there, and we can do a half hour or a 1 hour reading. And it's a 1 hour reading online. And I will call you, and we'll do that by phone. So I'm at fountainsofyouth.net. That's plural, fountainsofyouth.net. And so I always try to talk about ancient mysteries on my show each week, and I wrote a couple articles. I'm preparing my third DVD, and it'll be coming out later this year or next year. And so I'd like to read you a couple of the newer articles I've written. And the first one, the title is The Lost Map of Atlantis. So we're going to talk about this mythical, mystical continent that supposedly existed a long time ago called Atlantis. And the article starts that it says, is there a lost map of the continent of Atlantis that survives to this day? Most of us who research this material are aware that thousands of treasured documents and maps were burned by religious fanatics when they torched the Alexandria Library in Greece. However, one well-preserved treated leather map of Atlantis was transferred to Italy and was not destroyed in this great fire. A German priest named Kircher had access to the Vatican Library in the mid-1600s, and he discovered this ancient map. The map was not Roman, but had been brought over to Italy in the first century from Egypt, where it had been excavated. Kircher copied the map precisely, adding only a reference to the New America. The map depicts Atlantis as a very large island the size of France and Spain combined. It features a tall volcano located in the center, representing Mount Atlas, and six major rivers flowing to the sea. This matches the Greek philosopher Plato's description, which mentions several large rivers flowing across the land. Plato also mentions that the island submerged overnight. Curiously, the map is depicted upside down, with south at the top, but this anomaly may offer proof that it is a genuine map, as Egyptian cartographers created their maps in this manner, as the Nile River flowed from south to north. American Congressman Ignacio Donnelly in the 1800s researched Atlantis and produced a similar map depicting a large island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. He agreed with Kircher that this was the most likely location of this long-lost continent. There is an interesting footnote to this story involving the famous psychic Edgar Cayce. If you believe in the continental drift theory, then it's possible that Atlantis drifted from the middle of the Atlantic Ocean to the Caribbean area over time. Cayce mentioned in one of his readings that a lost fragment of Atlantis would be found in 1968. Indeed, back in the year 1968, there was an intriguing discovery in the Caribbean called the Bimini Road. Dr. Valentine, a researcher, found what appears to be an ancient wall or road with hundreds of square-cut stones forming a type of road in a shallow part of the ocean, once again near the Bahamas, Bimini. The road was a half mile in length, made of precision-cut limestone. Another researcher, Dr. Little, found a second series of square-cut stones beneath the first road, indicating that it appeared to be man-made. So there were two layers to this road, actually. He also found heart-shaped stones with drilled holes in them, and they appeared to be a type of anchor, indicating the Bimini Road could be an ancient dock or seawall. So the idea is that if Atlantis was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, 10,000 BC, that it drifted over the thousands of years, and parts of it, this ancient seawall or road, ended up near the Caribbean, much further to the west, thousands of years later. It's pretty mind-blowing that Edgar Cayce made this prediction, and they did find traces in that year, 1968. So to finish up the article, by the way, both Cayce and Plato described Atlantis as being populated by elephants, an idea that has generally been scoffed at by the scholars. But in the 1960s, oceanographers were dredging the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean floor and recovered hundreds of elephant bones, providing validation of these two accounts of life in Atlantis. So that's an article I wrote recently. I'm researching this topic of Atlantis and Lemuria as well, a supposed lost continent in the Pacific. And I have a really good archive, and if you click on Odyssey, if you click on my archives, where I talk to author Frank Joseph, and we spend a whole hour going into Hawaii and whether that's the lost, very last remnant of Lemuria, a continent that submerged in the sea as well in the Pacific. So once again, I'm a producer of a couple of DVDs on ancient mysteries and monuments, and check them out at fountainsofuse.net. I've priced them well at $15 each, and there's over 100 photos in each DVD, and it's really a lot of fun to get together a group of friends and watch this presentation, and then you can debate it and discuss it amongst yourselves. But I bring forward as much cutting-edge research as I can in my DVDs. So this next article is a brief one, and then we'll have to end the show. It's called Aztec History. The Aztecs believed in a large pantheon of deities, over 1,600 of them. They can be grouped into general categories. The principal deities were Quetzalcoatl, the benevolent teacher, and Tezcatlipoca, a warlike god. They had many gods of fertility, fire deities, sky gods, heavenly gods, underworld gods, and many more categories. It is true that the Aztecs engaged in cannibalism. According to early Spanish documents, it was not a common tradition, but they did participate in cannibalism as part of sacred rituals. In the Mayan culture, the flesh of human sacrifice was considered sacred food to be offered to the gods. This was most likely a tradition implemented by Tezcatlipoca, who was a more controlling type of god. They believed in the creation story of five worlds. The first was created by giants and overseen by Tezcatlipoca. But that was ended when Quetzalcoatl caused the giants to be devoured by jaguars. The second world was ruled by Quetzalcoatl, but was destroyed by wind, and the people were turned into monkeys. The third world was ruled by the rain god Tlaloc, but was destroyed by fire, and humans were turned into birds. The fourth world was overseen by a female goddess, but destroyed by a flood, and the inhabitants turned into fish. According to legend, Both brothers, Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipoca, created the current fifth world together. They fight an earth monster together, at one point turning into snakes. and at another, transforming into two trees. The snake and tree symbology bears an interesting resemblance to the Garden of Eden tale, with the two warring brothers, Enki and Enlil, the Anunnaki, that I talk about in my DVD, The Sands of Time. So that's a quick synopsis of something coming forward in my next DVD. And in just the last minute or two I have, I want to remind you to... there's a couple really great films that are free on the Internet I'd like you to see. The first is by Alex Jones. He's a great American, really uncovering the truth of what's going on out here in politics in America. And he has a free film called Terror Storm. Just click on Terror Storm, Google that, and Alex Jones, and you will get that free movie. And then the other really good one is by Aaron Russo. He's a Hollywood producer, Aaron Russo, and he wrote, his new film is called From Freedom to Fascism. And that gets into the income tax system and whether income tax is even legal, and the Federal Reserve System, how it is a private bank, actually. It's not part of our government. So once again, it's Aaron Russo, From Freedom to Fascism, and that's free on the web, and Terror Storm by Alex Jones. And if you go to Google, they always have a top 100 videos, and both of those movies have been in the top 100 for months. And just click on Google Video from the main site, and you'll get the top 100 films. A lot of them are kind of silly and nonsense, and music videos, and Paris Hilton, and a bunch of stuff. But there's some really good things there, too. So look for those, too, absolutely free. And then you can burn them and copy them and distribute them. So we're all out of time. It was a really great show talking about how to find your soulmate and with Riaka. And he's at Sacred Unions once again. And I will look forward to talking to you next week. Once again, get ready for David Childress. He's written many, many books on ancient monuments and mysteries, and he will be with us next week. Thanks for joining me. I'm your host, Mike Schultz, on Odyssey Radio. Take care and good night.
Hi, Peggy Lee Quayler here.